भद्रं करने दृश्यम देवा भद्रं पश्येमाक्षभिर्यचत्राः स्थिरैरङ्गैस्तुष्टुवागुंसस्तनूभिः व्यशेम देवहितन्यदायुः स्वस्ति न इन्द्रो वृद्धश्रवाः स्वस्ति नः पूषा विश्ववेदाः स्वस्ति नस्तारक्षो अरिष्टनेमिः स्वस्ति नो बृहस्पतिर्दधातु ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। So we're Mandukya Upanishad, the third prakarana, Advaita prakarana, and we're on verse 24. Nehanane ticham yanat. I'm sorry. one second. Nehanane ticham cham nayat. Nehanane ticham nayat. Indro maya biratyapi. Indro maya biratyapi. Ajayamano bahuda. Ajayamano bahuda. Mayaya jayate tusaha, mayaya jayate tusaha. Na iha nana iti cha amnayat indraha mayabihi iti api. Ajayamanaha bahuda, mayaya jayate tusaha. In the previous verse, that's better. In the previous verse, the Purvapaksha is this. The Shruti has almost an equal number. Just an equal number. There's an equal number of shrutis, an equal number of verses in the Shastra saying that this creation is real, and others saying this creation is mithya. Okay. And so when that's the case, we have to look at what the shruti is actually saying and what is logical. So he says, nishchitam yukti yuktam cha yet tad bhavati itarat. With a shruti, what is the tatparya, the nischaya? What is the message of the shruti? What's its tatparya? And what is the logic associated with that? So that's what we have to look into. Now, all of the different type of shruti vakya, shruti statements, are something which are analyzed. You know, in the Vishankara or in all the commentaries, they will analyze what type of shruti vakya, what type of shruti statement it is. The statements, there are statements which are really the tatparya. It's called the tatparya. That is the essential vision of what the Upanishad is unfolded. Mm-hmm. And fully. So those are the tatparya. Those are the statements which contain really the vision of the shruti. And then there are statements that are called artavada. Those type of statements are in support of the tatparya, but you can't take them by themselves. If you take them by themselves, as though they were the tatparya in a totally different vision then. Mm-hmm. You know? And so what Shankara or what Gaudapada is pointing out here is, yes, there are different types of shruti vakyas, so vakya means statements. So there's different types of shruti vakyas, but which of those statements are artavada and what are tatparya? Mm-hmm. So which of the statements are really unfolding the vision? Really the vision of the Upanishad is the Mahavakya. The Mahavakya is aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman, or tattvamasi, you are that, or prajnanam brahman. Brahman is just consciousness. So this is just in one statement, Mahavakya, the whole Upanishad can be reduced to that essential statement, Mahavakya. And so all of these statements which are unfolding or in line with that Advaita non-duality, those are the essential statements, right? But then in the unfoldment, we can use many different types of examples, you know, or we can use... See, this is the situation. When you come to this knowledge, to gain this knowledge, you come as a jiva, as an individual, within this creation, right? And so your whole vision is dvaita, is dual. How could it not be? Mm-hmm. The body, the mind, the sense organs, the world that you experience are all dual, right? And you come as a jiva, as an individual who is existing, conscious being, existing within this creation. Now, I have to deal for the student needs to understand not only that I am non-dual Brahman, but that this body, mind, sense organs, there's a lot involved in getting from duality to non-duality. So just think of it, just one aspect of it, is this creation, which I find myself existing in, that's dual. Right? The creation itself is dual, and I am an entity within this creation, that itself is too. I exist as a conscious being within this creation. And so now it's important for me then, if we want to get to Advaita, first of all, I have to understand what really is my relationship with this creation. Am I part of this creation as a jiva? Is this body, mind, sense organs part of the creation? Or am I a separate entity who has entered into it? And so really part of this understanding, what really in the vision, if I say aham brahmasmi, I'm Brahman, really what that has to mean to me if I say that is I am Ishvara. Because to say I am Brahman, to understand Brahman, I have to understand that all of this is nothing but me. Brahman is non-dual, conscious being. And so now what happens is, in that journey to understanding, that really systematic removal of ajnana, that systematic removal of ignorance, I have to recognize a oneness in many different levels. And one of those levels has to do with the relationship of this body to the creation, so that I see this body, mind, sense organs, as part and parcel of a greater story. Mm. So that this body actually is something that I end up surrendering to Ishvara. And I have to think of it like this. This body I see as part and parcel of Ishvara in the same way, and this is where drishtantas, illustrations, become so powerful. In the same way that I can see an individual dream character as part and parcel of the dream. That dream character is part of a greater story. But the dream drishtanta is extraordinary for us. It's like Bhagavan gives us all of these drishtantas, all of these illustrations to help us to understand. Because if I say to you, the individual is part and part of the whole, actually belongs to a greater story. It's also saying, if you start thinking about it, that individual is part of a greater mind. The individual has a limited mind, but is part of a greater mind. The individual is part of a greater story. It fits into a greater conscious being. So you can understand that. This is what the dream drishtanta, Swamiji's called it as the Achilles heel, to really understanding this vision. Because just think about it, if you recognize that this body in the dream, this body, is a part of a greater story, that the dream, the dream character and the dream mind is part of a greater story, if I say it's part of a mind. It's part of a mind. Mm-hmm. So that dream projection is known. Right? So I'm the Ishvara of the dream. I get to experience being Ishwara in the dream. And at the same time, I get to experience being a jiva in the dream. Mm. If I'm identifying with a character. So I can see I am both Ishwara, I am the Ishwara, I am the whole, and I am the individual. Right? So that understanding is extremely important. I also can understand that the whole, as a conscious, the dream is a conscious being, which enjoys the conscious being it enjoys, is me. It's my dream. And it is my being that pervades that entire dream. It's my existence, the sat-chit, the conscious being that dream enjoys. I can understand that because it's subjective. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have a dehatma buddhi. I don't have an identification. You know, I don't have an identification really with the dream character. I do in the dream, but you're analyzing the dream when you've already woken up from it, mm-hmm. right? So you know. Right? Within the dream, there's that dehatma buddhi. Dehatma buddhi means there's a conviction that the atma is the deha, is the body. It's more than a conviction. It's like a beginningless conviction. It's what I know to be true. And so that dream character will have that conviction. And that dream character needs a dream guru to come and take the dream character through a step-by-step unfoldment to the recognition of something which is very huge from the standpoint of the dream character. The dream character has to recognize that I am like the warp and woof. I'm part of a greater story. I am part of an infinite mind in reference to itself. And so the story that I'm living out is so much more powerful than whatever a little jiva can do. You know, like the jiva can like that, but it's part of something so much greater with so many karmas, so many interrelated, this is just in the dream I'm talking, interrelated karmas that so many people are involved in. And so for that story to unfold, you are not the center of it. You as a jiva are not the center of the story. But everybody's the center of it. You see what I mean? So the karmas are not just located on you. So that's why when you start to give kind of an infinite understand kind of an infinite intelligence to this story that you are a part of, you have to take yourself out of the center because there's so many other things that are involved other than just you from your perspective. If you're recognizing yourself as a player in a greater whole. So the getting to this point step by step, the jiva, the individual, has all kinds of questions and there's all kinds of unfoldments that have to be given to take a person step by step, just step by step by step by step to all along resolve you into Advaita. So here, the creation, first part is seeing yourself as part of a greater whole. But then the problem comes in, how does this creation come? You know? How does this happen? How does this creation come step by step? That includes me. How am I part of it, totally part of it? And so then we go through a lot of teaching about how the creation comes. First there's Brahman, and from Brahman, as Hiranyagarbha, the space comes, and then the more gross element, the Vayu comes, and the Agni, the fire comes, and the water comes, the Apaha comes, and the Prithivi, the earth comes, step after step after step of grossification. And I see myself in terms of the Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, how it's all interplayed. There's an interplay between everything. So they pay a lot of attention to this. Now what if I just took that out of the Shastra? I took the creation myth out of the whole creation story out of the Shastra. And then I just say, well, you know, it's really Brahman becomes space. Brahman becomes space, and then it goes into fire, and then all it goes into air, and then fire, etc. And I just take this little piece out. And then I said, see? They say this. They say this. So how can you say Advaita? You have to mean something a little different. You have to mean that Brahman actually becomes. You know? But we say, what we would say is, no, these stories and these logics, are, it's all very logical and it's all very real within mitya. But they, the tatparya, what they are aiming at is resolving you, the jiva, into Ishvara and resolving Ishvara into Brahman. And so you have to see the whole unfoldment. Otherwise, you pick out, okay, here they're talking about the creation, and here they're talking about mitya, but here they're really talking about the creation, so which is real? Well, you can only determine which is real by understanding what is actually the vision of the Shruti. So after saying that, he gives a couple of Shruti quotes to, and this is number 24, Shruti quotes to just discuss this a little further. So the first one he gives is na ihanana iticha amnaya. The amnaya, from the amnaya, the amnaya is what the Shruti says. Amnaya means amnaya. Because of the amnaya, this is what the Shruti is saying. One of the things is na ihanana. There is no duality here. Na nana. Here, there is no dvaita. There is no dvaita here. That's a huge thing to say. Because he's saying here, right here, there is no duality. So, then another thing he says, the Shruti says, Indraha maya bihi. Indra here is Parameshwara, is Ishvara, the Paramatma. Indra creates, if you take the whole Shruti, Indra creates all of this by Maya alone, through Maya alone. That's another Shruti statement. Another one is Ajayamanaha, it's talking about Brahman, the Atma, Ajayamanaha Bahuda. What this is Shruti statement is talking about, being unborn, Ajayamanaha, being unborn, Bahuda, it becomes many. Yeah, being unborn, it becomes many. How can something which is not born become many? How can it become? So, Ajayamat, Manha, Bahuda. He said, these are just three Shruti statements. He says, these three, with these just three statements alone, Mayaya Jayate Tusaha. He says, just with these three statements, the Atma, all of this, that this creation, saha, jayate, maya, all of this comes about by maya alone. All of this is born by maya alone. Because it can't be born. Now, the thing is, this is some of the logic, Shankara goes into some of the logic here, and all of this is really rotating around the around bringing in the Shruti. Let me just say a little aside about that. There is no problem, really. We say that liberation, moksha, is already a given. So you're not going to achieve or accomplish. There's nothing you can do to become liberated because you already are liberated. That's already your swarupa. That's already your nature. And so no amount of action is going to help you, right? Because it's already an accomplished fact. Now, your problem is only, can only be one thing. If you're already liberated, if that's already the reality, there's nothing you can do to become what you already are. So the problem is going to only be ajnanam, is only going to be ignorance. Okay. Now, if the problem is ignorance, the solution is knowledge. Okay. Because what removes ignorance is knowledge. Is simple. So then, for knowledge to be removed, for ignorance to be removed by knowledge, you have to have a means of knowledge. Okay. To remove the ignorance of the self, what would be the means of knowledge to remove self-ignorance? Because the means of knowledge that you have available to you as a jiva are only meant to remove ignorance of the perceptual world, the objectified world. That's what your means of knowledge can do. This is what we call the pramanas. So in India there is so much, and all with all of the darshan is so much work done on the pramanas, on the means of knowledge. It has to do with how do we know what we know? How can we know? What are the means of knowledge that can give us valid knowledge of the nature of whatever? What are our means of knowledge? Well, we have some, like my eyes can give me knowledge of color. If they're working properly, they become a valid means of knowledge for color. My sense organs give valid means of knowledge for their sphere, as long as they're working properly. Without those sense organs, I don't have that means of knowledge. And then we have others within duality, like inference and presumption and all these other means of knowledge, but all of them depend upon sense perception. And all of them give us knowledge of this world. So now the problem is, if the problem of moksha, liberation, if the sense of being bound is due to ajnanam, is due to ignorance, I need a means of knowledge to remove that ignorance. So this is actually a big thing to understand. So let me say a couple of more things about it. If you really are bound by your nature, say you really are subject to death, say ananda, that happiness really is gained from objects, you know, say that's true. For you to become happy, you must gain the right set of objects or the right set of experiences, and if you get it right, then you will become happy. What if that is true? Then no amount of convincing is going to change the reality. If that's true, it's true, and then you have to take action to make things happen so that eventually you will become happy. If that's true, then your knowledge of it is going to just tell you, well, what you thought all along is true, and so go try to arrange things until you can have more happiness than anybody else, or get as much happiness as you possibly can. That's the reality. And knowledge isn't going to help with that. It'll just verify it. It'll just say, yeah, you're right all along. Yes, you actually do die. That is your nature. You die. And so accept it. You're not going to be able to do anything about it. Just eat well, you know, live a healthy life, and accept it. You're going to die. So what is knowledge going to do for you? It's going to tell you, yes, you're going to die. You're correct. You're going to die. Okay? So if that's the case, knowledge isn't going to help you, and your actions aren't going to help you either. Because the truth is that you are time-bound. If that's the truth, you are time-bound, you are subject to birth and death, and your happiness is something that you need to achieve external to yourself. Okay? So that's it. What can you do? You just have to accept it and just live in samsara and make the best of it. Okay? Now, what if you think that that's your reality, you think that's true, but it isn't? It isn't true, okay? Then, again, nothing that you do is going to solve the problem. The only way that what you do will solve the problem, it will begin to solve the problem, all of your activities will begin to solve the problem, because you see over and over and over again that it doesn't work. Like say what you believe that, oh, if I can just get the right combination of things, then I'll be happy. But, you know, at some point after beginningless lifetimes, finally it dawns on us that that doesn't work. It doesn't work for me. It doesn't work for anybody. It has never worked, and it cannot work. Now I see, okay, it can't work. By the very nature of the creation, it's not going to do it. No combination of things are going to give me that level of, ah, all is well with me, I've made it. Not possible. because of time, because of the nature of time. Okay, so I realized that. Now what I realize, in realizing that, okay, there is nothing I can do. Because the creation can't provide that for me by its nature. So now I'm helpless. There's nothing I can do. Now the thing is, if I'm correct, there's nothing I can do. And if I'm not correct, there's nothing I can do. Right? Solve that problem. So the hope is it's not correct. But if it's not correct, then the problem is one of ajnanam, is one of ignorance. Now how am I going to solve that problem? Because what that would mean is everything is fine in reality, but I don't know it. So that is the that's the situation that we have. There is such a thing as moksha, and the moksha is what they call praptasya praptihi. I mean, it's an accomplishment of the accomplished. And that takes place through the removal of ajnana. But then the question comes, is how to remove that ajnana. So to really, that ignorance, so really to understand this problem, is the dream example is so good. Think of the dream character, is there existing within the dream with no, you know, Archimedean point out here while the dream is going on to look and see what is actually happening there. And that dream character with the sense organs and mind and body and looking around in the dream, up, down, inside, outside, looking, subject, object, doesn't have a means of knowledge to hold up like a mirror to allow that dream character to see, oh my gosh, this is all me. That my being actually is totally free of all of this, and this all rests in me. Like if you, any thought you have is like that, the thought comes from you, is sustained by you, it resolves into you. The dream comes from you, the whole thing is sustained by you, resolves into you. You see that clearly once you get out of it. But think of the dream character within it. That's our situation. We are a character here within this creation, and we're looking around trying to figure out, well, how can I get out of this? How can I really know? What is the means of knowledge? And so the Upanishads hold themselves as a pramana, a beginningless, a timeless pramana that comes with the creation. So you can think, well, that is strange. But it's not strange at all if what the Upanishad says is true. If, in fact, this is an infinite creation, if it's a conscious being, if it's the, you know, Purushottama, if it's a being, a person, you know, the Purushottama, an infinite person, a conscious being, why shouldn't there be a pramana? Why shouldn't it not? Why shouldn't it be there? In fact, it would be a horror story if it wasn't. That would be like a devil or so. It would be like a devil.
Trapped.
Because, say there is no pramana, you're a conscious being, you're Ishwara, a conscious being, and then all these jivas are floating around in your, as part of your being, and they're praying to you, and they're asking, what is the truth? What is all of this? Who am I? And then Bhagavan just, there's no space for that. It doesn't make any sense. See, look, this is just a type of logic that you have to extend, but it's a very beautiful logic. You have eyes. So you have eyes, so there should be something to see. You have ears, so there should be something to hear. You have thirst, so there should be something to drink. You have hunger, so there should be food. You have a desire. All beings, human beings, I mean, I'm talking about all beings in a general way too, have a desire to be whole, to be happy. And there is a solution to that. The knowledge of the truth of what is actually happening is the solution to that. And it works. Okay. So there is a solution. But that solution doesn't exist in the creation. It doesn't make any sense. Think like this. You have a dream. You know? You are the Ishwara of the dream. And the dream characters in your dream are praying to you. Literally. Okay, so you're having a dream. The dream characters in the dream are praying to you. What's really going on here? I remember asking with the Bhagavan to God when I was little, what is going on? What is the truth? Who am I really? Please come down and see me. And all these kind of children prayers. Most of every mumuksha has their own story. You know, what is the truth? What is the truth? And so here you are, the Ishwar of the dream. And there's no reason for that not to be made available. Everything else is made available. Everything that you seek, everything that is natural and inherent to you being a human being, all of those things are supplied. Everything. And so why would it be everything except this, which is absolutely fundamental to all human beings? Because all human beings, in fact, in the Shastra and the commentaries, it'll all say in so many different ways, every human being, and every being actually, wants to be happy and wants to not suffer. Let me be happy and let me not suffer. Even the animals. Let me be happy, don't hurt me. That's it. It's a driving force. And so we're seeking. We seek happiness. And we don't seek temporary happiness. Nobody says, oh, let me have this experience so I can have just a little moment of happiness. That's not what I'm looking for. I would like to be whole. I would like to say all is well with me. Ah, I've made it. I'm successful. All is well with me. I'm stable. I'm happy. I don't have to think about it anymore. It's over. That's what we want. Mm-hmm. And then out of that happiness, happily I'll live my life. But let me happily live my life. All beings want that. And so why shouldn't it be there? And if it is there, it has to be my nature. If there is a solution to this problem, the solution must be my nature. It must be because the universe cannot give me that. This body, mind, sense organs, or the universe can't give me that because it's coming and going. So there is no constancy here. There's only one thing that is constant. There's no constancy to be found here. Everything is birth and death, 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 birth and death. And so what it says, birth and death cannot give me anything lasting. So it's really, we call happiness a dukkha yoni. It's a womb for dukkha. Sukha is a dukkha yoni. It's a womb for dukkha because the sukha always comes to an end. And so now there needs to be a way for me to fulfill myself as a being. And I'm not going to be able to do it by anything that the universe has to give me. It's not possible. So there's nothing I can do. So it boils down to self-knowledge. It boils down to knowledge, to removing the ignorance that has caused this superimposition that's causing me to take myself to be other than what I am. And that's what the Upanishad is. Maybe there are other types of Upanishads around the world, different versions of Upanishads. If you go back in time, as I was saying, you know, all of these worlds collapse. These worlds that we have now, these countries that we have now, those all collapse if you go back in time. And so you can say India has held this pramana, right? It's held this pramana. Over there. Is that better?
Oh yeah, that's way better.
Okay. So India has held this pramana in the form of the Upanishads. It's considered to be beginningless. And when I remember still the day I realized that there was such a, I was in India when I just met my teacher, Swamiji. I only went with him for a few months. We were in India, he was teaching. And I saw it. What I saw was there really is such a thing as a pramana. There is such a thing as knowledge. There is such a thing in reality as a guru. This word guru, you know. That actually exists. That there actually is a means of knowledge. That there actually is such a thing as liberation. That is a huge recognition to be able to say that, even before you know, but to be able to say, there it exists, that liberation or moksha actually exists, and that there is such a thing as Upanishads, and there is such a thing as this teaching methodology, that it actually is part and parcel of the creation. And so, when we are studying this, we are studying within the tradition, right? So Gaudapada is part of this tradition. And so he's talking about now, you can establish logically Advaita in so many ways, but it has to ground itself. What we're using logically, what he's establishing logically, is itself grounded in the Mandukya Upanishad, because this is the Katika. So the logic he's giving is grounded in the Upanishad, which is the pramana, which is the means of knowledge, exposing yourself to this teaching methodology which holds up a mirror to your being. And then once you see it, the logic that supports it and the experience that supports it is infinite. There's no limit to the logic supporting what the Upanishad has to say. And there's also no limit to your experience supporting it. So these three things, the pramana needs to be there for knowledge to take place. You need a pramana, a means of knowledge, which are the Upanishads. You need yukti. It should be logical. Say the Upanishad says something, you can't relate to it at all. There's no anubhava. Anubhava means you should be able to experience what they're saying. Say they're talking about you, well, there should be some way that you recognize what they're talking about. That's anubhava. You should see it. It should be grounded in the reality of your experience. It should be logical. What if the pramana reveals? It should be logical. That's yukti. And so say, what's being unfolded by the Upanishads is there to be seen, right? Because if it's a pramana is a means of knowledge, it has to be something it's talking about. So what it's talking about is you. So you have to be there. And so the words of the Upanishad should point should take your mind and direct your mind to the recognition of something. So that's direct and immediate. And then you should be able to question it in any way that you want to understand. Your mind has to understand. That's the logic. How is this? How could that be? Why couldn't it be like this? The mind has to be free. It's the mind that has to understand. It's the mind's the ones that has the problem. So the mind has to understand. It needs clarity. So that pramana, yukti, and anubhava are so important. So here, having given some logic, he wants to again back this up. Why the tatparya of the Upanishads is not in Srishti. Srishti means the creation. But rather it's in Advaita. The tatparya is in Advaita. The Srishti, the creation stories, are only used to resolve, for the sake of resolving this duality into non-duality. That's what they're for. To resolve duality. That's their artavada. That's their mission, is to resolve. And so what he says now is, in the Upanishads, if the creation stories were real, if that was the tatparya, they could never say there is no duality here. They could never say that Indra, that Parameshwara, creates all of this by Maya alone. That can't be said. Because it totally negates the reality of the creation. They can't say that the Atma, Ajayamanaha, never changing, never being born, becomes many. Something that is never born cannot become. Right? That's an impossibility. But it does become many. Why? Maya. Through Maya. So now, having given these three quotes, what he says is, this being in the Shruti, these Shruti quotes being there, then there is no possibility of the self being born except by Maya. Right? The self becomes all of this Maya Eva by Maya alone. And so, with Maya, when we understand Maya, then all of this, well, if we understand Maya, then all of the creation stories, you can all have all of them. They're all mitya. And they all make absolute sense. Right? Space is more subtle than air, which is more subtle than fire, which is more subtle than up than water, that is more subtle than earth. And so this process of grossification and then the retraction and all that, it makes perfect sense. Understanding the sattva, rajas, and tamas and how this all makes, with the sattva, rajas, and tamas and the five elements makes one whole of which you are included, it's beautiful. It makes complete sense. It makes this whole creation as Ishvara, as one infinite being in which there are the seer and seen phenomena is there because of sattva and tamas. You know, so as you understand all this panchikarana and how the creation unfolds, what it does is create a picture that allows you as a knower to be part of this created world because of sattva. Sattva reflects consciousness. So we can have knowership within this creation, which is a reflection in a sense, of consciousness, which is its truth. Yeah. And so this whole thing then makes sense, and you can fit your upadi, your body, mind, sense organs, into this as part and parcel of Ishvara. So these creation stories or unfoldments are extremely useful because you have to let this body go. You have to give it to Ishvara. If you don't give it to Ishvara, then you're a jiva walking around in an inert creation. You're not you're not Brahman. This is Ishvara. It's part and parcel of Ishvara, but how to understand that, to let it go? You let it go, it's not that it goes anywhere. But your letting go is the ahankara. You're letting the ahankara go. You're bringing the ahankara back to yourself. It's not ahankara anymore. Now it's just the aham. You should see, when you say the word I, where does it land? If you say the word me, where does it land? Where you want it to land is on yourself. But Brahman, the invariable conscious being, which you are, which is present to no matter what thoughts you're having, what experiences you're having, all of those experiences are taking place in me. And that's the truth. Even an ajnani can say that, yeah, all these experiences are taking place in me. I mean, it's obvious, right? You can't have an experience that is not taking place in you. But we don't realize ourselves as the invariable, which is actually the consciousness which, because of which the mind is known. That's, we don't understand that. We don't go farther than the mind. We don't recognize the mind as having that adhishtana of myself. We want the me or the I to resolve, to sit with me who never changes, with me whose my very nature is so beautiful. There isn't anything more beautiful than this conscious being. There's nothing more that you want more either. In all of your experience, there's nothing that compares to the nature of yourself. You wouldn't trade your being for anything. Well, I'll take that. I'll give you my being for that. Well, that's not going to work. I'm the one that I do everything for. Everything that I do is a worship of me, in the sense that, in fact, there's some verses that actually say this literally. Everything, every sense perception is coming into me. It's all a pranam. It's all like an offering to me, the conscious being. And everything that I'm doing is really, though I don't think of it like this, I'm trying to clear my mind out so that my being is shining in it. You know? I'm trying to release my mind from all of the impurities, all of the raga dvesha, all of the likes and dislikes, you know, so that I can just be with myself. And you can talk like that even as a samsara, you can talk. I just want to be free. I just want to be with myself. Because there's nothing more dear than that. So all this antakarana shuddhi is so meaningful. Even without knowledge, it's meaningful because it gets rid of some of the raga dvesha, some of the upsets. That's why, you know, when we combine, as we're teaching, we combine that work with the antakarana shuddhi. Once you have knowledge, antakarana shuddhi takes on a whole different meaning. It's not relative anymore, really. In the sense that it's for the sake of helping me just to recognize my own being and abide in my own being. You know? So I'm resolving all of these problems that I have that are meaningless. I get all worked up over these things that are meaningless. They have no ananda. they have no ananda in them other than my own being. The ananda that all of these things in the world enjoy are nothing but my own being. And so I'm getting worked up over these things out here that have nothing at all, zero. They have nothing to do. They make no contribution whatsoever to the ananda that I'm seeking. But what they do is create a lot of pain. They create pain. And so as I offer all of those worries or those hurts or the things I'm carrying with me, you keep offering them to Ishwara and just to take them. That's a beautiful habit, because your mind gets into the habit of when those things come up, then you just offer them. Because they don't contribute. There's no amount of worry that is going to contribute to your well-being. You can get into thinking that worry will actually produce something. You know, if I worry enough, then it'll actually happen. I have to worry it into happening. But that's not true. So as I start to realize that, I start offering and offering and offering anything like that. Anything that's disturbing your mind, you should just close your eyes and offer it. Float it down the river. And you know, and then let the positive things come, because they're fruitless. They mean nothing. The ananda that you seek is the ananda that is your very being, and nothing can take it away. The only thing that's seemingly taking it away is the samsara that we fall into. I need this to be happy. I need that to be happy. And it's very engaging. The world's very engaging because you've spent your whole life looking for happiness from the world. And so you can be very traumatized and very hurt by it. So that's all true. And so it takes a while to unwind, you know, from all of that trauma, and for your mind to be able to just be with it, be with the self, and then kind of objectively deal with the world and with all of the problems that are there. So, it's not like you gain knowledge and the world doesn't have any problems anymore. It has all kinds of problems. but relying on your own ananda, then you know, being with your own ananda, then you are free to deal with those problems in a kind and gracious way. You can be kind because you're not threatened. You know, when you're threatened for your life, your happiness, and you're not kind because you're afraid, all of these things. That's what all goes away. And so here, I'm not going to do the next verse because I need my set. I don't have my sense for your comments. But the next verse also is bringing in some quotes from the Shruti about that negate any type of creation. It negate as an effect or as a cause. So we'll see that next week. Verse 25. So let's stop there. Swasti prajabhya paripalayantam nyayena margena mahim mahishaha go brahmane pyashubhamastu nityam Loka samasta sukhino bhavantu. Kale varshatu parjanyaha. Prithivi sasya shalini. Desho yamsho barahitaha. Brahmanasantu nirbhayaha. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha. Sarve santu niramayaha. Sarve bhadrani pashyantu. Ma kaschit dukkha bhak bhavet. Asato ma sadgamaya. Tamaso ma jyotirgamaya. Mrityorma amritam gamaya. Om purnamadah purnamidam. Purnat purnamudachate. Purnasya purnamadaya purnameva vasishyate. Om shanti shanti shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om. We all have to come up to the farm. We're all having a nice time sitting up here.
It's cool today.
Yeah, it's cool today. It was a nice day out today. Not so hot. And it's cool tonight also. Yeah, John, you should come. You're in the Bay Area. You should definitely come. Come soon. After I get back from India. We're going to have class Thursday night and Saturday night. Thursday at the Berkeley and Saturday at Berkeley. But then I'm going to be gone for a week, 2 weeks. I'll be going to Sweden and then to India. So I'll be back on the 8th. I'll send out a flyer to everybody, a little email.
Thursday night and Saturday morning.
Yeah, Thursday night and Saturday morning. Right. Yeah, I know, Shri. We'll have to figure out how to get your dogs up here with you. We'll make that happen. That'll be really fun. She has two little dogs.
Oh, yeah?
And I think they're little, too. They're like little like Hiro. Yeah. That'll be interesting. I have somebody his own size.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
He's a whole different character when somebody his size in the room.
Little Chihuahua mixes, right? Both of them? And Hiro's really tiny also. He's only like 9 or 10 pounds. But he's very big.
He's big.
He's a very big. There's a little Tibby up here too. That'll be interesting. Hi, Nita. Good night. Oh, Jojo, you have a dog named Jojo too, 9 pounds. What about your other dog? £17, so that's bigger. All the little dogs will be sitting in here gaining knowledge. They've got some karma.
They do.
Their little mamukshas taking a little time out in their little doggy bodies.
Hero has lots of karma.
Amazing. He's got wonderful karma. What a joyous life he has. Don't you think?
Yes, yes, I do. I think so.
Oh, did they listen to the class tonight? Yeah. We have Hiro here who's listening to the class, and then when Penny's Jojo was here listening to class, they did very well. Oh, really, Nella? I was using that. Oh, I see. Yeah, we changed from that. We have a better system now. But if you go to the website, it'll give you the right number. Oh, on your iPad. I see.
Well, now you're on. That's good.
What?
I was talking to Nella.
Oh, I'm so wiped out. It's from the heat, working in the heat, because I didn't do that much. Not really.
So, this verse that we were just on, in one sentence, what's the essential essence of that verse?
That the Shruti itself talks about non-duality, the truth that the Tatpari is non-duality, and that they would never say things to negate the reality of the creation, if the creation was real. They're saying, they're making statements against the creation, the reality of the creation.
Because that's true.
Yeah, because, see, if the creation stories are an artavada, they have a certain purpose, but their purpose really is the resolution into duality, into non-duality. And so he gives some statements that negate the reality of the creation in the Shastra. And if the creation is real, you're not going to give a statement to negate its reality. That's the idea. And then later in the next verse also, there are also, where in terms of knowledge, where's the pala? In other words, knowledge has a result. And so there is no pala in the reality of the creation. There's pola in the non-duality, but there's not pola, there's not any fruit to be gained in the reality of the creation. And also there's a lot of ninda, what they call ninda or censorship, about being caught in the creation. If you take any dvaita, any amount of dvaita, there's even a whiff of dvaita, there's bhayam, fear. And the one who has knowledge is free of fear. All of these type of things. It's all trying to get to the Tatparya. What is actually the vision of the Shruti? Because that's why I kind of spent some time at the beginning. The Shruti is viewed as the means of knowledge. The pramana. You need a pramana. That's going to be true even in if you go into the Tibetan Buddhism. Even there's some that are very similar to Vedanta in terms of needing a pramana. You need a means of knowledge, not just experiences that your mind's capable of having. You can even have a non-dual experience, but you come back from it. So the non-dual experience is bound by duality. So unless the creation is mitya, no experiences, every experience is time-bound, even one of a dvaita, because it's only a momentary experience.
It goes away.
It goes away. As though Advaita never goes away, but you have to recognize what it is. It's not an experience of the mind. You know, like a non-dual, meditative experience in Nirvikalpa Samadhi, for instance. That requires the mind to be in a certain condition. When the mind is in that condition, then there's no appearance of the universe. It's just Advaita. It's just Brahman. But the mind comes back from that. And so, then you want it again. You want the experience again. So Brahman is relegated to the world of experience rather than to be the very self of every experience. You see what I mean? It's really critical, actually, because it'll take you on an endless trip. But these verses, I mean, they're kind of hard for me to teach also because they're very technical. They're all about the Shruti as a pramana and what the Shruti says and what are the essential verses in the Shruti and what are the supporting verses in the Shruti. And we really don't have all the background to make that meaningful and exciting. But it is meaningful and exciting if you're contained within the tradition.
Well, this is one of the last Upanishads of student.
Yeah.
Listens to it, not one of the first.
It's the last one.
usually the last Upanishad that's taught, and then you go to the Brahma Sutras.
But that doesn't mean you're advanced because you hear the this first. I mean,
well, I mean, I've taught for many, many years before teaching this, but you guys haven't been here. That doesn't matter. When I started with Swamiji, I started with the Brahma Sutras. That's the last thing you ever teach, and it was like about 80% Sanskrit. I didn't know any Sanskrit at all, but I sat there in every single class, and I got something too in every class, even though a lot of it was way, way over my head.
Drinking chai.
Edward didn't do it, yeah. Edward and Alf and it.
Well, he went to the chai shop while you listened to the sutras.
And yeah, I was glued, waiting for those little morsels, little moments of understanding. And that's about what it was, too. Yeah. It doesn't matter when you come in because it'll circle, everything circles around.
So it sounds like in layman's language, he's just saying, really, we're not BSing around, we're really being valid here. Kind of sounds like what this verse is saying.
Well, it's taking it back to the source. This is what the Shruti says. You can use logic and all of these other things, but this... But it goes, when you go to the pramana itself is saying exactly this. So when it's shruti means the pramana, yukti, and anubhava. You have to cover all three, and so he's just taking it back.
Now these objectors that are in this chapter 3, are they accepting the shruti just like Gaudapada is, but interpreting it wrong? Or are they also questioning the shruti?
Some, like these, are... accepting the Shruti, and so that's why the argument is meaningful, because they accept the Shruti, but they are looking at it differently, and so then this argument becomes very meaningful logically to them. But some don't accept the Shruti at all, so it depends upon the argument and what the particular argument is.
And the point of presenting all these arguments is
your own clarity, because
it's not to be the philosophical champion. It's really about
you,
the student.
Because these are
up and clearing up
doubts, up doubts. Yeah, because the clarity has to exist in your mind. You know, it's not about getting rid of the mind. You can get rid of the mind with drugs or whatever, or a meditative. Meditate, but then you have to meditate, so the mind doesn't come back. So it's not about that. It's about the mind gaining knowledge, understanding. And it's a direct, immediate knowledge because you're here. Right? And this universe is here too. So they're talking about what is actually right here, totally, experientially present, is your own being and this world. And they're in totally engaging, they're functioning as a pramana, and then doing a lot of analysis on what it is that they're showing you. What the vision the Upanishads is giving you is then being the same Upanishads that gives you that vision analyzes it. Like, why is that true? Yeah. And then the commentaries, like Shankara's commentaries, analyze it even more. But it's all not just an intellectual head trip. It's so that you see the truth of it. And otherwise what happens is you kind of see and then your mind goes, yeah, well, what about this and what about that? Those whatabouts have to be seen.
Well, this is interesting development of experience, listening of, phases of, oh, my God, that's crystal clear, and then phases of, it's mud, what are you talking about? And then, it just keeps alternating. Like that,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's crap. No, I hate that. No. Oh, yeah, this is good. Oh, that's clicking. Oh, bad. And just.
Yeah. So the bad ones you should note down.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then
we talk about them. Yeah. Yeah. Those are the.
Most
those
of
the
tonight.
Yeah. Well,
Yeah, I didn't do a good job tonight either. It was hard to do. True. Oh yeah, no, it is true. I don't mind. I don't always do a good job.
Well, you didn't bring your.
Yeah, I don't have my. I didn't have my book.
That's amazing. That was the main thing, and you left that.
I had them in my hand. I was positive I put it in my briefcase. I had both of them in my hand. I was positive I put them there. They're not there. I looked all over.
I didn't mess with it.
I think you did.
It was Tibby.
Tibby took it out.
Tibby's revenge.
Little Tibby. She's getting tired of me going so much.
She hit him.
She hit him.
Well, it's definitely switched from wondering why we're even on this Mandukya to seeing some of it work and then really valuing it. So.
Yeah.
I mean, not on the Mandukya, but on this esoteric division of all the little points, some of which seemed like irrelevant, but now I see that they all have a meaning. So.
Yeah, and some things that are maybe irrelevant to you now would be relevant later. Mm-hmm. You don't know what the order of your mind's process is.
So there's a stream of teaching going on, and your mind has its own order, and that has to kind of somehow just
merge. Yeah, it has to work
God's
out.
Order. Yeah.
But that's why the teaching is circular. Like I never say something just once. I say it like 1,000 times in all different ways. And so that gives, and then your mind goes in its own order. Yeah. And then it's like the other interesting thing is it goes in its own order, but then once it sees something, it sees it, and then that allows these other things to become clear, and these other things come clear. And now it sees the same thing that it had seen before, but it's much different. It's not that it was wrong the first time, but now it's much more.
It has more dimension.
And so it goes like that. The vision just keeps becoming more and more and more clear, more whole.
Yeah, things click off and then, okay, that part isn't anymore than the remaining.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really incredible.
Do we study Gaudapada in other respects besides this Mandukya? Is this one?
No, I think that's it. I think that's the one.
Awesome.
He probably had other writings and whatnot, but we don't have everything anymore. Mm-hmm. We're lost. That's all we have.
Yeah, if he wrote this, then you would expect him to have other stuff. It wouldn't just be a one.
Probably, but that's what we have as far as I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Shankar is teacher, so he must have been a monster.
It was Shankar's guru's guru.
Oh, it's Guru's Guru.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing.
So, is this actually poetry? Is that what these lines are?
Oh, they're always written in verse, these shlokas.
In meter, you mean?
In meter, yeah.
But they don't rhyme at the end like English poetry does?
No, they don't rhyme.
They don't rhyme.
But there's a meter. Yeah, so that you can chant them. Because everything in India is get by heart. Yeah. You know? They didn't used to have books, so they memorized everything. Mm-hmm. They still do.
Right, like so sometimes a lot of couplets have the same number of words per line as other ones, so.
The same number of syllables.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to be able to write something that meaningful and then to make all the syllables have the same number.
Yeah, but you know, it is, wow. But there's in Sanskrit, like, there are many, many words for one word. Like, say we have the word tree. And just tree, not maple tree, but the word tree. Mm-hmm. They all have like 100 words for tree. Wow. Of different syllables, you know, different meters. So you can stick a word in there. They don't just have one word. That's one of the things about Sanskrit, it has a huge vocabulary that's can be a little difficult, but. What's that? What you licking there? What you licking? He's doing something. Hero, what are you doing there? What you doing?
Is he awake?
Yeah, he's awake.
He's a character.
I thought he was licking in his dream.
No.
He moves his feet in his dreams.
Does he?
Oh, yeah.
Running. He runs.
Does he?
Yeah.
Yeah. He snorts. He runs.
He has very active dreams.
He's an amazing little guy.
Okay, I want to look.
Well, you know, this...
Oh, that reminds me of something. Go ahead and I'll find this for you. Go ahead.
Well, the Upanishad is so short.
Yeah.
And then this commentary is so long.
Because the...
You know, you tend to forget what...
Oh yeah, we
started.
That's
yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, 12.